Hello and welcome to The Skeptic's Guide to the Universe. This is your host, Stephen Novella, President of the New England Skeptical Society. Today is Tuesday, January 17th, 2006. With me tonight are Perry DeAngelis.
Hey, everybody.
Evan Bernstein.
Good evening, all.
And my bro, Bob Novella.
Hey, what's up?
We're at the beginning of a new year, the end of an old year, and I think it would be appropriate to review the psychic predictions for 2005. How did our psychic friends do last year?
I'll bet you they batted 1,000.
There is a science writer, Gene Emery, who has made himself famous in skeptical circles by, for a number of years, 20 years or so, actually since 1979, so 26 years. He has been tracking the psychic predictions, you know, mainly those that have been published in tabloids like The Sun, every year. And then at the end of the year, he reviews them and tracks their success rate. Over the last 26 years, their success rate has been very close to zero. Now, interestingly, he notes this year that the tabloids stopped attributing specific predictions to specific psychics. They just say, here's our panel of psychics, and here are all of their sort of lumped together predictions. Have you guys seen any of these yet for 2005? They're always so funny.
Not yet, but Steve, don't you find it a little unusual that their hit rate is close to 0%? Isn't that anomalous in itself?
You would think. I mean, if they were trying to be accurate rather than just sensational, I think they probably would do a little bit better.
That's true.
I think I could probably do better than 0% if I was trying to make some fairly high probability hits. And the hits that they do make are high probability hits. Like someone noted that there would be a change in the Pope in 2005, which could be either a death or a resignation. So they left it a little bit open. And they didn't predict the more difficult fact, which is that the Pope would be German. They in fact predicted that the Pope would be Italian, which again is a high probability way to go. So occasionally they do get these sort of high probability hits, but here are some of the things that they said for 2005. One prediction is communications would be disrupted when Earth's magnetic field reverses. A California inventor would cause earthquakes in Los Angeles and San Francisco. NASA astronomers would find a ruined city on Mars. Of course, if they did find one, they wouldn't tell us about it, right?
Of course.
Israel and the United States would invade Syria and Iran. Not yet. This is a great one. Edible furniture designed for couch potatoes would have to be recalled because of a sanitation problem.
That's got to be a joke. That's got to be purely
comedy. Millions of dollars in divorce fees would be saved when disgruntled couples were allowed to play a new computer game where the loser dies in real life.
What? This can't be real.
Some of them are just ridiculous. Sometimes Gene Emery notes in his annual report that sometimes the tabloids will bend the facts a bit to try to give their psychics some credibility. He says, for example, the Examiner said that a psychic, Leggett, correctly predicted 5 major hurricanes hitting the U.S. in 2004. However, unfortunately, there were only 4 major hurricanes hitting the U.S. in 2004. The fifth one that they listed was actually a tropical storm, not a hurricane. So they'll tweak the evidence if they have to, or the facts if they have to try to...
Did anyone predict Katrina?
So, no. So, I mean, again, you bring up the next point, which is what the psychics don't predict. Not only are their predictions close to 0% and coming true, but it's remarkable that none of the world's psychics predicted Katrina wiping out New Orleans. None of them predicted, going back a few years, that the big events over the last few years, none of them predicted 9/11. So typically, none of them predicted also the tsunami that occurred last year that killed so many people. These are certainly, world-altering events. If there is such a thing as psychic energy, one would think that the psychic reverberations of, tsunamis and hurricanes and, massive political reshaping terrorist attacks would have them. So you know, thanks to Gene Emery for this. It's always useful to actually keep track of what the psychics have to say. They always count on the fact that we don't remember the misses. You know, we don't remember the predictions that don't come true. They'll throw out 100 ridiculous predictions, and one will come true by chance, and then that's the one that they'll include in their press release and their website now, and their promotions. But Gene Emery keeps them honest, at least for those who are interested in such things as honesty and truth, by tracking their predictions. So always a good read. I think he has a website which we'll have we'll link from our notes page, and also his annual predictions tracking is printed in the Skeptical Inquirer, so that will probably come out in the next issue, usually the first issue of the year.
We should try to get him for the podcast.
Yeah, we should. Yeah, he'd be a good guest to have on our show. We'll put him on the list as someone to contact for the future. And before we go on to our guest today, let's just also mention that coming up on February 12th is what? Do any of you guys know what February 12th is?
Lincoln's birthday.
Valentine's Massacre?
It is Lincoln's birthday, and Lincoln shares his birthday with what famous scientist?
Edgar Cayce.
Albert Einstein?
Charles Darwin. Charles Darwin and Abe Lincoln have the same... They're not only the same birthday, the same...
Same
day.
1804?
No way.
That's right.
Cool.
So February 12th will be is Darwin's birthday, and there's a group called Darwin Day. You can go to their website at darwinday.org, which tries to just encourage and coordinate celebrations of Darwin Day around the world, and just a celebration of, you know, evolutionary theory and of the, you know, the genius of Darwin as a scientist. Part of it also is sort of a cultural backlash against creationism and criticism of Darwin, and they specifically mention, you know, how important it is to acknowledge Darwin in the face of such attacks over the last year as intelligent design.
Is there going to be a parade in Dover? A Darwin parade?
Yeah, there should be.
The Darwin Dover parade?
And it does say, yeah, it says the bicentennial birthday of Darwin's coming up in 2009. So I guess he was born in 1809.
Yep, 1809.
Right, so in 3 years will be Darwin's bicentennial. So that,
cool. I'm sure they'll have some big festivities for that. This guy, people are already planning it.
So if you're listening to this podcast in time, don't forget to celebrate Darwin Day and visit darwinday.org. So let's get to our guest. This is the second time we'll be having a guest on The Skeptic's Guide. That's not a skeptic, that is promoting belief in a claim that is traditionally not accepted by skeptics, specifically the existence of Bigfoot. Joining us now is Eric Altman. Eric is the director of the Pennsylvania Bigfoot Society. Eric, welcome to The Skeptic's Guide.
Thank you very much.
Thanks for joining us.
It's my pleasure.
So, you told me just before we came on that you have been Bigfoot hunting since you were 10. That's right?
That's correct. I've been involved in Bigfoot research either through book research, television movie research, documentary research, and actual field research for about 25 years now.
And what got you interested in Bigfoot?
I got interested in Bigfoot as a child, watching the old Sunday afternoon matinee movies on television. They ran some cult classics like The Legend of Boggy Creek, Creature from Black Lake, Sasquatch, The Legend of Bigfoot. And I saw those as a kid and was fascinated by them. And then from there, started doing the book and newspaper, magazine research, and that kind of thing.
So let me just... ask you straight out up front. You believe that Bigfoot really exists, and you think the evidence supports that. Is that correct?
I believe there's something out there with the evidence that's been collected and the eyewitness reports. There is something out there, and it very well could be a Bigfoot creature. I'm not 100% certain that Bigfoot exists. I'm probably about 85-90% that there is something out there.
Okay. Well, what do you think is the most compelling evidence that there is something out there?
Actually, there's several things that really have really led me to the point where I'm at, the 80, 85, 90% belief that the creature does exist. Or I shouldn't say belief, I should say more
probability.
Educated probability that Bigfoot exists. And that would, the first and foremost, is the Roger Patterson, Robert Gimlin film from 1967. I think that's probably the only video footage that I've seen that depicts or shows an actual creature, an upright bipedal creature walking across the sandbar. They have yet to prove it 100% that it is the authentic thing, and they have yet to prove 100% that it is not a creature, it's a man in a suit or a hoax.
Right.
My personal belief on it is that it is a real creature. It does depict a real creature walking across the sandbar.
Why is that, Eric? Why do you believe that?
Well, from some of the scientific studies that have been done on it recently, and my watching the film and studying the film, I feel that the animal in the film or the creature in the film is much too massive to be a human. Its gait or its stride is very, very difficult to duplicate a human, for a human being to duplicate. Some of the evidence that was found at the site, the footprints that were found at the site, were so deep in the sandbar that the horse that they were riding, the horses they were riding, didn't even leave an indentation like this animal did. There's several factors that really contribute to my belief or my thinking that this footage is the real thing.
Well, are you familiar with John Napier's analysis of the Patterson-Gimlin film? He's an anatomist and anthropologist that is works at the Smithsonian Institution, director of primate biology. And you know, he and others, you know, other anthropologists have analyzed the film, and their impression is that the size and the gait of the creature in the film is within the range of human anatomy. And also doesn't match the footprints that were found at the site, as if the footprints were made by something else other than what we're seeing on the film. I just don't know if you're familiar with that particular analysis. Yes, I am.
I do agree that the gait and the stride are within the realm of human possibility.
Like I said,
it's difficult. The way the creature walks is difficult to replicate, but it's not impossible.
Mm-hmm.
It can be done. I've talked to several other researchers, and I've seen demonstrations based on the evidence that was found at the site. I've seen other people try to duplicate this, and they've had a very difficult time doing it.
Right.
Although
it depends. The one point I was going to make, it depends on if you're trying to replicate the tracks or the film.
Exactly.
The tracks are not necessarily actually made by a walking creature. If you accept the possibility that the tracks could have been hoaxed, the evidence of the creature walking on the film actually is much easier to replicate. Do you agree with that?
I do agree that the not so much as the tracks, but the creature, it can be replicated, like you said, but I don't feel that it is a human being. It's very difficult to walk like that animal. And simply because seeing the documentation on television and talking to some other researchers have talked to Dr. Jeff Meldrum about this, and he even agrees that the way the creature walks, its gait, the way it swings its knees outward before placing them down, and the way it lifts its foot almost 90 degrees perpendicular to the ground is very difficult to duplicate.
Right.
It isn't impossible. It can be done.
Right.
I'll be the first to say it can be done, but I don't think that somebody is going to try to fake something that in that film to make it look that ridiculous in a walk. And even
why not?
With somebody wearing a suit, well, I think if somebody was wearing a suit trying to walk across a sandbar, why would they swing their legs the way they did trying to walk like that? Why not just walk like a normal human being?
Maybe they're trying to make the gait look unusual because they're trying to look like something other than a human being.
Again, it's possible, but I just don't think that if somebody hoaxed that film in 1967, I don't think that they were that intelligent enough to do that. I think what's in the film is the real thing. Like I said, I'm not going to go out and say it's 100% guaranteed
right.
A Bigfoot. What I've seen and what I've studied the film and watched the film. I've seen it a couple hundred times myself.
Right, as have we.
The real deal.
Now, so, of course, you can't talk about the Patterson film these days without at least addressing the book by Greg Long, The Making of Bigfoot, where he claims to have interviewed numerous people involved in either directly or indirectly in the hoaxing, Patterson's hoaxing of the film. What do you think about Long's analysis?
I think Long's book is a character assassination on Roger Patterson and nothing more. I've read the book. I feel that all he's done through the book is attack Roger. They claim that, that Philip Morris created the suit, but yet no one has produced the suit.
Mm-hmm.
The witness testimony, it's the same thing as Bigfoot research. All you have is witness testimony. You can take
right.
it and throw it out the window. It means nothing. They have Greg has proven nothing, except he's out to attack Roger Patterson's character.
Right.
I've read the book, and that's basically what he does in the book. Is it possible that Bob Hieronymus was the man in the suit? It's possible. Highly unlikely, in my opinion, but possible. But the book, to me, really it really serves as no relevance to the film, because one major factor why I feel this way is not only because of the attack on Roger Patterson in the book, which he constantly does, but it's the fact that when he presented this book to the Bigfoot community and to other researchers, when asked the hard questions, he became extremely defensive and very argumentative, and almost belittling and attacking other researchers
right.
instead
right.
of answering the questions. What purpose does that serve? If you're going to present evidence, whether you believe it or don't believe it, you should at least have something to back up your evidence or your claims and not go out and attack people. And that's what he did. Instead of presenting his answers and why he thought this way or why he felt this way, or he didn't. He attacked everybody who's questioned him. He would not answer the hard questions. So I find his book completely irrelevant.
Well, I think it's reasonable to be critical of Greg Long, but I don't think it's fair to dismiss his book as irrelevant. Even though you may not agree with his style or the way he presented his case. He does have a rather extensive interviews of individuals. So you're right. You're absolutely right. It comes down to testimony. He was not able to produce any smoking gun evidence like the costume that somebody wore. So it still comes down to the credibility of the people involved. And if, at the very best, I think an objective outside person could say, well, the whole thing is a wash. I mean, if you're gonna, there really is no reason to accept, say, Patterson or Gimlin's credibility over that of Hieronymus or Long or any of the other people who were given those testimony that Patterson had essentially bragged to them that he faked this, hoaxed this video. So, if you dismiss all of it's hard to pick and choose what eyewitness testimony to accept and what to refute. Certainly scientists don't do that. And if you just take the scientific position, well, let's just dismiss all of it and go just based purely on the hard evidence, what we're left with is an incredibly ambiguous film that in and of itself does not establish the existence of Bigfoot, because there are other possibilities that cannot be dismissed.
I agree. I think you're right. All we have to go on at this point, with the exception of some footprint casts that were collected at that site, and we don't even know if those are legitimate or not,
right,
all we have
right.
to go on is the film. The eyewitness testimony can be thrown out, and it's done in the court of laws every day.
Right.
And the scientific community does not even look at eyewitness testimony.
Right,
they need hard facts.
Exactly.
So you're right. The film can be a complete wash, and all we're left with is video footage, 30, 40 seconds worth of video footage, and that's it. But to me, that stands on its own.
Well, of course, you know, coming into this, that we're skeptics, and
oh, of course, yeah, I hear that.
And we have probably just a higher bar for acceptance than that. Obviously, I wouldn't accept that evidence as sufficient for a number of reasons. The first, it comes from our experience in investigating hundreds of different kinds of paranormal claims. And it's so typical for a key piece of evidence to be either a video or a photograph that is just at that perfect perfect distance and resolution where you get the very creepy suggestion of something unusual or paranormal, but there isn't sufficient detail to make a positive identification. It's the exact same thing whether you're looking at pictures of Bigfoot or ghosts or the Loch Ness Monster or name anything, any other controversial entity. Yeah, Bob.
Steve, doesn't that remind you of when we interviewed the Warrens?
The White Lady video, yeah.
Yeah, the video, we asked them for their best evidence, and they showed us the
White Lady of Union Cemetery.
Right.
It was exactly the same thing.
It was very
distance.
Similar.
Yeah.
The distance, it's like they calculated it almost, like, all right, what would be the best distance so that it was just kind of a vague impression of something there. Could be a person, could be a ghost, but you can't really tell either way. So it kind of reminds me of that.
Yeah. No, I think, I think one thing you have to say is the video is ambiguous. And it does fit well into the pattern of controversial claims in that, again, it's suggestive without really being probative, without really having any kind of details that would enable an objective scientist, for example, to make a positive identification. So to me, that smells of a hoax. That's my personal take on that, but again, as an objective scientific opinion, is the evidence is ambiguous, and therefore, I think the most objective thing to say is it doesn't establish or refute any particular claim. So,
exactly, and that's what I said from the onset.
Right, which is fair enough.
It hasn't been proven 100% that it's real, and it hasn't been proven that it's 100%
right.
Hoax.
But you find it compelling personally, is I guess the difference
would be. I find the footage very compelling and very interesting. I'm not going to go out on a limb and say that it is a Bigfoot in the video footage, but I do believe that that's what it is. I don't believe it's a human in a suit.
Okay.
That's just my personal opinion.
Eric, why do you think?
Unfortunately, without a body to back up the possibility of Bigfoot existing, without some piece of a body or a full body to study, we're going to run around in circles the rest of our lives. Whether it's with the Patterson film, the Skookum cast, footprint cast, eyewitness testimony, it all boils down to the fact that in order to solve this mystery once and for all and to prove that this thing does exist, we need hard scientific evidence through either a piece or a full body. And that's the bottom line.
You would agree that it's odd that one hasn't been found in all these many years. Wouldn't you agree, Eric?
Yes, I would. I would completely agree with that. Bigfoot research, from my knowledge, has been going on since the late 1950s, early 1960s,
mm-hmm.
with the footprints that were found by Jerry Crew in Northern California up to present date. There are active field researchers out there, there's active organizations out there looking for this creature, looking for the golden chalice, if you will.
Mm-hmm.
And no one has yet brought forth a definitive piece of evidence to say, yes, this does exist. I'm hoping that soon, with all the inventions, modern technology, the video equipment, the collecting equipment for DNA, that someone will be able to bring something to the table. As of yet, it hasn't happened, and quite personally, I don't see it happening within the next 10 to 15 years.
Why not?
Why not?
Well, I think people are going about this the wrong way. And what I mean by that, and this happens in every paranormal field, and I'm sure you gentlemen can attest to this, everybody wants to be the first to solve the mystery. And until organizations, researchers combine our efforts, put aside the petty arguing, the who's right, who's wrong, and work together to solve this, it's not going to get solved. Each group is going to do their own individual thing, whether it works or it doesn't work. Information is not going to be shared, and we're not going to get to the bottom of the mystery.
But this does cut to the heart, in my opinion, of the mainstream scientific opinion, which is basically skepticism regarding the existence of Bigfoot, in that, now of course, from a logical point of view, you can't ever prove a negative. It's impossible to prove that Bigfoot doesn't exist or that never has existed. that's just a logical impossibility. So what science has to go on when there is basically trying to establish a negative is say, okay, well, the more we look and the more we come up empty-handed, the smaller the probability that whatever we're looking for exists. So all you could really do is shrink the probability of existence, and it never really reaches zero. So if you apply that sort of scientific model to the Bigfoot phenomenon, say, okay, we now have 50 years of Bigfoot hunters, of, you know, incredible improvements in video and photographic technology, you know, video cameras and pictures are virtually ubiquitous now. Everyone with a cell phone has a camera. And in addition to, you know, our ability to do DNA analysis, et cetera. And yet, there isn't a scrap of objective hard evidence. So, again, the probability of Bigfoot existing, I think a reasonable scientist wouldn't say, is zero, but it has shrunk down to awfully small, given the persistent, you know, 50 years of negative results. And that's also partly based on the fact that, you know, if you hypothesize that there is a population of 7-foot-tall primates, you know, living in the woods of North America, that requires, you know, a breeding population requires, at a minimum a couple of thousand individuals. It would seem awfully difficult to hide that many animals out there without ever turning up a bone, a corpse, you know, or ever a hunter running afoul of a Bigfoot and shooting it. What do you think about that? I mean, that's basically our position. So how would you analyze that or respond to that?
I think that's a valid position because there is no hard evidence that has been collected. But something I think you guys are failing to look at is the fact that there is evidence there. It's unfortunately, at this point, a lot of it is circumstantial, but there is hard evidence being gathered and being collected. We do have hair samples that are on record and on file. Dr. Henner Fehrenbach, formerly of the Oregon Primate Institute, has hair samples in his collection that are from an unknown primate. There are track casts that have been taken that have been discovered to have dermal ridges in the cast. And I'm sure you're familiar, dermal ridges are the things that we have on our hands and feet, that fingerprints and toe prints that identify us. Jimmy Chilcutt is a forensics specialist for police department in Conroe, Texas, and he has studied these tracks and he has found these dermal ridges. He's also an expert in primate dermal ridges. He's taken thousands of primate fingerprints and footprint models, and he has them on file, and he's been able to study these dermal ridges from these supposed Bigfoot casts, and he's come up with his conclusion that these dermal ridges in these casts do not match human, they do not match known primates. So we are slowly starting to gather evidence, which is starting to turn the heads of some scientists. There are some scientists who are now finally starting to look at this evidence. So we can't say the probability is going down almost to zero, is still there, because there is hard evidence coming out now.
Do you in fact think it's increasing, not diminishing?
I think it's starting to finally come into light. Yes, I do think it's increasing. I don't think it's decreasing. And the reason being, as I mentioned, there is hard evidence. They're finding these dermal ridges. They're finding these hair samples. They're finding these things that they can't match with any known species of animal known on this planet. So, yes, we can't say that they are Bigfoot, but there's something out there that's leaving these footprints with the dermal ridges. There's something out there leaving these hair samples with DNA that cannot be positively identified. So, yes, I think the evidence is increasing, although be it slowly increasing, it is increasing.
But you did sort of allude to the main problem with those lines of evidence is that there is no gold standard. In fact, we don't know
what we have no body to match it with.
So the best you can get to is an unknown, and an unknown doesn't equal Bigfoot. It equals an unknown.
Exactly, and that's the starting point at least. At least we can say yes, we are finding something out there that does not match any known primate, any known species of animal. The DNA found in the hair does not match anything. And that we have to have a starting point somewhere.
Although, so you have to be careful with the DNA evidence. The thing you have to realize, it's not that every mammal's been ruled out with these hair samples. It just means that, you know, whatever they did compare it to didn't match. It doesn't mean that that you have to create a new species in order to explain the existence of that hair. It's possible they match something that just hasn't been compared to yet. You know, there are, you know, hundreds of species of mammals. So there are no hair samples that I'm familiar with, alleged Bigfoot hair samples that you know, really have been exhaustively compared to other mammal species. Only again, usually they're compared to humans or some local animals, other primates, etc. So, which still leaves a lot of possibilities, because, you know, the amount of DNA that you, first of all, hair itself doesn't have DNA in it, I'm sure you know. You have to get a hair sample that actually has a root in it, and you're lucky if you get any DNA out of it, and it takes time, and it's very expensive to do DNA analysis and comparisons. So, no real exhaustive analysis has been done. So the fact that they're unknown is really not that impressive. It means it's unknown, but it doesn't necessarily mean that there's got to be some new species out there. Nothing has been established to that degree.
Well, to me it does, because if we're looking at something that is unknown, there's something out there that hasn't been classified. So to me that is important, and we need to find out why.
The point I made was it's only unknown because all known species have not been properly or adequately ruled out.
But you fail to realize that what they're doing is they're going out there and they're matching the hair versus the animals that are known to populate that area. So if they're looking for, let's say, Sasquatch hair, or they're looking at a possible Sasquatch hair, and they haven't tested it against gibbon, gibbon's not popular to that area or not even native to that area. I mean, that's what I'm saying, is they're out there matching the animal hair to what's native to that area. And if they're not finding anything to match to that, then there's something there that's not native, and there's something there that's unknown, and I think it deserves to be looked at further. I never once said it's a Bigfoot, but it is definitely intriguing, and it does give us a starting point to start looking closer at the evidence that we have.
So, yeah, Eric, I understand what you're saying, but that does bring up another problem with the whole Bigfoot research endeavor, in that the field is rife with fraud and hoaxes. So when you have hair, for example, you say, yeah, you compare it to species that are known to be local, but how do you know the hair wasn't brought in from a gibbon or an elephant or whatever, or some creature from Africa? That's certainly easy enough to do. So I do think that there is a problem with verification. It still comes down to, a lot of the times, the credibility of the person who collected the evidence. And again, there's when you're left with an unknown, it's really just hard for scientists to know what to make of that. So I think we both agree that. Unknowns do not establish the existence of a new creature, or specifically a Bigfoot, and we just sort of differ on, you know, what we think is the most likely explanation for those. But I do want to get back to one thing that I think, you know, Perry was bringing up before, and that is, again, I think this is a point that demarcates those people who think that Bigfoot may or probably exists from, you know, those of us who think that he probably does not exist. And that is, you know, what you really make of the fact that there hasn't been a body recovered in the last 50 years. Do you think, what do you think is the explanation for that?
Well, I think there's a couple reasons why we haven't brought a body in yet. First and foremost, those of us who are out there researching, with the exception of a small few, aren't scientifically trained to positively identify a corpse or a portion of a bone as a Bigfoot or anything, you know, other than a normal wildlife. So when we're out there, we find something, and if it looks peculiar or it looks odd to us, sure, we're going to collect it, but what do you do with it? You know, do you contact the authorities and say, hey, I found some bones, and have them come and look at it and to tell you, oh, they're deer or they're bear? I think a lot of the researchers out there today, and it is a very, unfortunately, it's not a professional background, because there aren't professionals in this field. We're all amateurs with varying degrees of experience. I think a lot of the bones are found in the woods can be easily misidentified because we're not properly trained to identify them.
Right.
I also think that, and I'm sure you're all aware of this, when an animal dies naturally in the forest, it decays very quickly. And it's the bones are eaten by other animals. Nature has a way of recycling animals very quickly. So unless you're there within a matter of weeks to find this body, chances are you're not going to find much. And like I said, if you're finding a segment of a bone, how do you know if that bone is actually a Bigfoot bone or a deer or a bear or a raccoon?
What about teeth? How about teeth, Eric?
Even teeth are going to be hard to identify. I've found jaw bones in the woods of deer, and I believe I found a bear jaw bone one time. But I honestly don't know what they are. I've looked at them. I put them in a baggie. Are they worth turning in to have the money spent on the jaw that could be a deer, to have them analyzed? Being amateurs, you know, we're going to make mistakes. You know, we're going to look at things. We're not going to be able to identify things. We need to have a professionally funded scientific, I guess you call it expedition or search to find this kind of evidence. The amateurs that are out there doing it are doing a great job with what training or experience we have, but I don't think it's enough.
Right. Well, I mean, I would take a slightly different view on a couple of points. I mean, I think that, sure, animals who die in the woods are eaten by scavengers, their remains decompose, bones take a lot longer, teeth much longer, but still, you know, that the soft parts would survive typically for weeks or months, during the winter much longer, and the bones, though, would survive for years, typically. In fact, just recently, just by coincidence, I discovered the bones of a dog that had died about 15 years ago on a relative's property, and they actually knew who the dog was. It took me a while, actually, to identify the skull. It can be very challenging to even just identify it as a dog. But the other point that I would dispute is that it's difficult to identify an animal from a single bone. In fact, some biologists are expert at that. It's actually incredible how accurate an identification you can make from a single bone. There are characteristics, precise characteristics of different animal bones that enable them to be identified with great accuracy. Even from like a single femur, you could tell what species a femur is from. So certainly a giant primate jaw or skull or even leg bones would be absolutely unique and identifiable. You know, not in the slightest would a biologist confuse that with a non-primate species. And then once you know you're dealing with a primate, then you know you can compare it to existing primates. Any remains that were discovered would be different looking enough that anybody who found them would bring them to attention, and I think the scientific community would be all over them. I don't think there would be any mistaking them for anything other than a newly discovered giant primate. So I don't agree with your analysis on that score.
Well, I think it's possible if it's found, but as far as I know, no one found anything yet.
Right, I agree with you. I mean, with that, that was actually my initial point is, you know, it does make one wonder why. We find remains of all other kinds of animals in the woods, despite the fact that they decay, et cetera. So just at some point, it just becomes remarkable that, again, a population of these creatures could be living in North America and no hard evidence has come to light. No bodies, if you want.
The way I look at it is this. I've been a hunter for about 15, going on 16 years now. I spend a lot of time in the woods hiking, not just looking for evidence of Bigfoot, but I enjoy hiking.
Right.
I know there's a population of deer in Pennsylvania, well over millions of deer in Pennsylvania. It's one of the most populated and widely hunted states for deer population. I walk a lot in the woods, but I have yet to find the remains of a deer that have died naturally. And I'm talking teeth, jaw, something that hasn't been shot. I can identify as being shot. I haven't found anything that I could look at and say, okay, well, I know this animal died naturally or didn't die naturally. And if that was the case where the remains of all these animals were still there for us to find, we would find a lot of deer bones and a lot of jaws and such. The deer population is tremendous. Now, if you compare that to what's believed to be the population of a Sasquatch or the Bigfoot, even you had said there possibly could be thousands of them. Spread that out across the entire United States, and what are the odds of finding the remains of a Sasquatch? Very, very slim. That's the way I looked at it.
Well, you know, if you certainly, I mean, actually, I have actually found the deer carcass in the woods, but that again, that's anecdotal. But the
right, I
said
too,
a pretty
they've been shot.
Well, I find one that, well, I don't know if it was shot or not. It was just on a river, on the side of a river. It was mostly decayed. The skeleton was intact. But anyway,
I've seen a lot on the side of the road.
That's for sure. Nobody's ever hit a Bigfoot in their car. That's for sure.
That's true. Yeah, that actually does bring up a point. Certainly, I do see a lot of dead deer on the side of the road. It would only take one Bigfoot running afoul of a car on the road to end this controversy, and maybe that will happen one day. That has not happened.
We can hope. Us researchers and believers in the subject can hope.
Right. Well, at least we agree on that, that, you know, certainly the recovery of a live or dead Bigfoot, the actual body of one, would end the controversy, and pretty much nothing short of that would. Although I do think that the opinion of the scientific community would change dramatically if even there were some good, reasonable quality, convincing photographic evidence. And again, it's more surprising to me that none of that has emerged, given how common place it is to have, you know, pretty high quality, you know, cameras and videos.
I agree with you, but I disagree with you. I think if the right circumstances were to happen, showing an animal doing something that no normal human being could do, then yes, photographic video evidence could very well help support our cause. But with today's technology and the ability to computer enhance digitally video or photographic evidence, I don't think that's going to work. I've seen a lot of photographs that people have either sent me or that have show up on the internet of someone saying, this is a Bigfoot, or this is what we saw running across our field at night. And you look at it, and you're like, wow, that looks pretty good at first, but then when you really start to look at it closely, you can tell maybe they did something with Photoshop or...
Right. Well, you answered your own question. Expert analysis can usually detect photo manipulation. So any photograph that was offered as evidence would have to pass muster, would have to pass the scrutiny of photographic experts. If it were done with film, the negative is always very, very helpful. With digital cameras, you don't get a negative, but you would hopefully have a raw and unmanipulated file.
It goes back to the Patterson film.
Yeah.
I mean, back then, they didn't have the technology to enhance the videos or to make changes or put something in it.
True, but I don't think anyone ever charged that, though. That's not one of the charges of the Patterson film. It's just that it's not a Bigfoot, it's a guy in a costume, not that the film's ever been manipulated.
Right, but also back then, they didn't have the technology to really enhance the video footage to really study it, and now they are starting to. They still haven't yet, with today's technology, been able to deduce that it is a man in a suit or it is the real thing.
Right, right. Yeah, that would be if it's possible to get more information out of that film. The Zapruder film comes to mind with the JFK assassination.
Yep.
They did do that with the Zapruder film. They did digital reproduction and enhancement, and it really did help. It would certainly be interesting. I don't know if that information's there. I mean, looking at the blow up photographs of the Patterson Gimlin film, it gets pretty blotchy. You know, when you get real close up of the creature in the film. It just that information just may not be there, even with digital enhancement. But it would be interesting to see what emerges.
I'd be very interested to see that myself. I just disagree. I don't think video footage really is going to solve this, no matter how compelling it is. Someone's always going to throw the monkey wrench into things and say, you know, look at this. Well,
right.
That can't be done. It was done with a computer.
I agree it won't solve the controversy, but I do think it would make it much more interesting. And the photos that are being published by, you know, Bigfoot groups right now are so uncompelling that it's not raising anyone's eyebrows, in my opinion, except for people who already believe in it.
I was going to say, what we talked about off the air about the photos on my website, or lack of photos, is strictly the reason why we don't have photos.
Right.
We don't have compelling enough evidence. I mean, sure, we have some broken branches or possible footprints that
right.
we found,
right.
but we don't have compelling enough evidence to put up there where we're going to risk our reputation as an organization that's out there researching just to throw up a blurry photo and say
right,
it's a Bigfoot.
Right. Well, good. I think you have more integrity than some other sites up there who certainly feel free to publish.
I've seen pretty bad ones.
Yeah, they're like Rorschach tests to me, basically just blotches off most of them.
They really are.
They've gotten the title, or they've become affectionately known as blob squatches.
Blob squatches,
yes.
Right? And
yes.
it does. They do hurt their own credibility when they do that, of course.
Eric,
right.
I just wanted to, since we mentioned other websites, I noticed that you have links to other not just Bigfoot or even cryptozoological websites, but other paranormal websites, ghosts and things like that. Why are you connected with all sorts of paranormal websites? Why? I'm just curious. Why? Why is that?
Well, what we started to do, it was basically out of common courtesy, is when someone asks if we would mind linking their site to ours and vice versa, I don't have a problem doing that. Some of the sites up there are, not to be rude, but some of them just really aren't very good websites.
Mm-hmm.
Some of them are ghosts, some are UFOs, some just have very bad information on them. I put them up there to show people that there are other websites and they can go and make their own decision on them. I'm not endorsing them. I'm not saying, you know, this is the best website there is out
right.
there on the subject. People have just approached me and asked, hey, Eric, I have a website. Would you mind posting a link and I'll reciprocate and post your link?
Would you post a link to our website on your
I'd be more than happy to. If you send me your link, if you send me your link privately through email, I'd be more than happy to put your link up there.
Just checking.
I'd be more than happy to put anybody's link up there if they send me, their link. I don't discriminate as far as putting links up. It really has no meaning as far as what our organization does. You know, it's just networking with other people in hopes maybe one day that, you know, that group or that website or whoever sent us, you know, a link in reciprocation may have some evidence that they could share with us.
Do you have a personal belief in some of these phenomena, Eric? Ghosts, a UFO, etc.?
Growing up, I was fascinated by UFOs and hauntings and other cryptozoological animals, the Jersey Devil, the Loch Ness Monster, stuff like that. I've gotten away. I do believe that there is a spirit world. And I don't want to get too much into that, but I do believe that there are spirits, and I've had personal experiences which have led me to believe that there are spirits. UFOs, I'm not a very big UFO fanatic, but I think there's a possibility something's out there. I'm open-minded enough to believe that anything is possible unless it's proven not. And I have yet to see them prove anything doesn't exist.
Well, again,
that's
that's a logical impossibility. It does say
right.
in your bio that you're a member of the Pennsylvania Ghost Hunters Society. Are you active in that, or is that just out of, you know, passing interest?
That was a group that was formed several years ago by a researcher by the name of Rick Fisher, and the group has been not dissolved, but turned into the Paranormal Society of Pennsylvania, and they investigate everything, UFOs, Bigfoot, ghosts, and I serve as a consultant to their group as a Bigfoot researcher.
Okay.
I've gone on some ghost outings with them as an invited guest, and I've had some very weird and unusual experiences with them, but I'm not more of a ghost hunter. I'm more of an investigator of Bigfoot phenomenon and studying the sighting reports and that.
Okay. The reason why we ask these kinds of questions is because certainly we've noticed that there is a sort of a cozy relationship between various different cryptozoological and paranormal societies. Where once Perry and I were at a local UFO convention, and there was a little section on Bigfoot within the UFO convention. Mm-hmm. So obviously, you know, as scientists and skeptics, you know, to us it makes sense that, you know, people who are interested in UFOs or ghosts or Bigfoot, you know, would be interested in all of these topics because the approach is often very similar. I think, you know, again, you seem to be very interested in bringing to Bigfoot hunting a certain amount of scientific professionalism and credibility, which I think if you're going to do it, that would be a reasonable goal to have. Do you think that this sort of close association with other paranormal phenomenon hurts the credibility of Bigfoot and the enterprise of Bigfoot investigation?
I think it can. I think because Bigfoot is an unknown entity or undiscovered entity, and it has that mystery about it that it's lumped into the same category as UFOs and ghosts and other paranormal phenomenon, because it's something that hasn't been yet proven and is something we really don't fully understand yet. I think it's been lumped in there, but what I'm trying to do and what other researchers are trying to do is study the phenomenon and prove that this animal does exist, that it is a living, breathing, flesh and blood animal and not a paranormal creature or
right.
You know, something from a UFO or a ghost. Our organization is open-minded to the fact that we need to explore all possibilities when it comes to Bigfoot, because we really don't have an answer at this point in time.
Right.
But I am of the set mind frame that this is an animal yet to be discovered.
Let me ask you a hard question. Are you open
sure.
to the possibility that Bigfoot doesn't exist and is purely a psychological and cultural phenomenon?
Yes, I am open-minded enough to think that it is possible Bigfoot does not exist. However, I have talked to enough witnesses, I've seen the evidence myself, to make me really question, you know, okay, does Bigfoot really not exist? Something's out there. I have yet to find out what it is, and that keeps me motivated. Every time we get a sighting report, or every time we find footprints, or someone discovers a hair sample that needs to be tested, that keeps me motivated enough to go. I have not personally seen a Bigfoot. I've heard things in the woods that I can't explain, that I can't say was a Bigfoot or was a known
right.
animal that I'm familiar with. I have seen footprints in the snow and in the mud that are much larger than a human foot, and they resemble a bare foot. Why somebody would be running around up in the mountains in 15 inches deep of snow and bare feet is beyond me. Could it happen? Yes. Does it happen on a regular basis? I don't know about that. But until we have a body that we can scientifically study and learn from, then yes, it is very much possible that this animal does not exist. All we have to go on is circumstantial evidence, eyewitness testimony. We are starting to get some better evidence through hair sample study, through the dermal ridges on the footprints of casts that are taken. So we are starting to get some better evidence to really... not so much as debunk the fact that they don't exist, but to give some credence to the possibility mm-hmm. that they exist.
Okay.
Or don't they? I don't know.
Right. Well, that's good. We appreciate your honesty. I think we could end on that note. I think we both agree that there's certainly you can't prove or disprove it at this point, and that the only thing that will end the controversy is, you know, indisputable biological evidence. And you're open to the possibility that they don't exist. We're certainly open to the possibility that they do exist. We would be absolutely convinced if adequate evidence, you know, came to light. So,
yeah,
Eric, great. That's great. So, Eric, thank you again for being on the Skeptic's Guide to the Universe. We appreciate you, you know, coming on the show and subjecting yourself to our withering skeptical analysis of your views.
It was my pleasure. I enjoyed it.
Thanks. Thanks a lot. Good luck in your Bigfoot
you,
hunting. We certainly,
thanks,
if there is a book Bigfoot out there, I hope you're the one to find him. Okay.
Well, thank you.
Take care.
You too.
So, what did you guys think of Eric Allman?
A very reasonable fellow, I felt.
He was. I mean, you never know what you're going to get when you talk to somebody who runs a Bigfoot society, but I would say that he's towards the more reasonable end of the spectrum.
Yeah, I was gonna ask him about the whole psychic Bigfoot aspect that some of the real fringe Bigfooters believe, but I didn't even bring it up because it was obvious that he definitely was not at that end of the spectrum.
Right. Well, imagine being on the fringe of Bigfoot believers.
Right.
The fringe of the fringe.
I found it interesting that he said right off the bat he's 85 to 90% convinced that there is
something Bigfoot-ish out there.
Right, granted. Yeah. Yet at the same time, during the course of our discussion, he seemed to acknowledge that there's no evidence for it whatsoever. So he's basing his entire 85 to 90% on his own personal belief and nothing more, really, I think is what
That's not entirely fair of him. He didn't say no evidence whatsoever. So there's no body. There's no biological evidence. But what he said he based his belief on was the Patterson film, which he thinks is compelling, on the hair samples that have not been identified.
Right, no evidence.
The dermal ridges on the feet, which is all, again, that's all just nonsense.
Right. So what evidence?
Yeah, so
on
circumstantial evidence. He acknowledged that it was circumstantial or inferential, but he did.
I think the point is that he has been faced with the same evidence that we are aware of.
Yes.
And he has come out with a 90-plus percent believability, where we have come out with a 90, I would imagine, 99%. Unlikelihood of the existence
of a large,
primate in North America is yet undiscovered. It seems ridiculous on its face.
Yeah, I mean, to his credit, he acknowledged that there's only a body would really end the controversy.
Yes, he did admit that. That was encouraging.
Photoshop aside, crystal clear. High-definition video evidence would compel me.
Yes, I said that too. It would be compelling. It wouldn't be a controversy ender, but it would be at least compelling, which nothing out there
now
is compelling.
Now, imagine, though, someone's got a video, a very compelling video. What would have to be on that video to really make it compelling and not something that a visual effects artist can throw together? Think about it. Think of what would really
be
compelling.
You could digitally put a Bigfoot in the Super Bowl halftime show and make it seamless as if that Bigfoot was really there at the time with 50,000 screaming people around him.
Yeah, but photo experts would be able to tell that it was manipulated. But Bob's point is, a Hollywood costume expert could make up a Bigfoot. You wouldn't have to manipulate the photo. But you could put a guy in a costume.
What I'm saying
that would be seamless and good.
Right. What I'm saying is that I think there's no such thing as a truly compelling video. I think it's impossible.
I disagree.
Make one to change your to really make you think about it, because we would always say, "Come on, all you need is a special effects artist, a moderate effects artist, to put together a good costume, some good prosthetics." I mean, they've got stuff with mechanized electronic prosthetics that would blow your mind, where you would say that's not a person in a mask. I think it's impossible to put together a truly compelling video.
I disagree. I think that if I watch film, high definition, clear, sometimes close up film of a creature in a natural surrounding.
Family would be better.
Family would be even better. And you know what else? If I saw 3 hours of it, or 5 hours of it, and you gave me 5 hours of primate behavior, intelligent primate behavior.
Yeah. Like Jane Goodall with the chimps.
Yes.
Why Jane Goodall could cozy up to chimpanzees, and we also have there were other researchers with the mountain gorillas, Jane Fossey, I think it was her name. Why aren't there any anthropologists cozying up to the Sasquatch and with hours of footage of them investigating their
culture? All
right,
guys, say we did have 5 hours of this stuff, okay? What would that bring you down from? Right now, say you're at 99.999, what would you go down to?
I'd have to see the film.
Yeah, I'd have to see the film. But it would...
Well, think about everything you just said. Imagine it there. Everything. Nothing to make you think that's a guy in a costume.
Bob, it would also require that the video was investigated by skeptical scientists and said that, all right, this has not been manipulated, that special effects people said you know, first of all, that none of them, you know, admit to doing it, but also that they were under the impression that it was not, that there were actual live biological animals, not costumes.
Well, that's I mean, that would be helpful. That would be
helpful. The more of that you get, the more compelling it becomes. Again, it never, I don't know that it would ever get beyond, say, 70 or 80% without any biological corroboration.
Yeah, but that'd be a big turnaround, down to 20%,
it would,
you know.
As I said, it would make it interesting.
It would revitalize now, the entire phenomenon. But
it would. But also, if you had that, you probably would also get corroborating biology.
Exactly. You would. That's my point. Yeah, what's the follow-up
sure.
work? What's at that site?
That's
what,
for
you
sure.
know, show me where they've been breaking the branches. Where's their spore? Where's it, you know... Where's the follow-up work?
Yeah, where are they nesting?
You know,
whatever.
Rather
even...
than 15 seconds of bouncy horse video, you know.
Yeah.
Come on.
It is. It does. I mean, again, I think our familiarity with the paranormal does come into play here because it is such a fake phenomenon. It has all of the earmarks of a cultural sort of hoaxed phenomenon. All the evidence is of the exact quality that you expect from a phenomenon that's not real. It's all just at the edge of being legitimate and compelling. You know, the videos are always blurry and without sufficient detail.
There's
the
no capture. There's no body. There's, you know what I mean? There's
just
physical
cameras
evidence.
Are everywhere. Cameras are ubiquitous. There's nothing.
And the explanations for the absence of bodies in biology and compelling evidence is frankly naive and lame.
It kind of struck out there, in my opinion.
It reminds me of those people who claim that there was a Bronze Age civilization in Connecticut, a couple of thousand years ago,
mm-hmm.
at America's Stonehenge. I forget what that location
right,
was
right,
called.
Right. Yeah.
And they were asked, well, if there was a Bronze Age civilization here, how come there's no Bronze Age tools or pottery or anything? And the guy's response was, well, you don't think they're going to leave all that valuable stuff just laying around, do you?
Whoa.
I mean, come on.
Boy.
But they do it every other archaeological site everywhere else in the world. So anyway, the dismissive explanations for the lack of evidence is just not compelling.
Yep,
and
holds no water.
And it holds no water, and it separates legitimate scientists from amateur.
I think Eric was a good guy. I think he's trying to be reasonable. He wants to bring some scientific normative approaches to this research, but
except he's come up with his conclusion before he's really examined.
He did. I didn't jump on him, but he did say my goal is to prove that Bigfoot exists, not to find out if he does exist or not.
Red flag.
A scientist would not have said it that way,
right?
If he were being thoughtful.
Well, he said he was an amateur.
Yeah.
And that's.
Said he was
something
amateur.
Tells me they're all amateurs. So
I believe he said
that's
that.
That's just my guess, but they're all amateurs in my book.
I believe he said that.
Well, it was fun.
All right.
Yes, it was.
Into it. Guys, thanks again for joining me.
Thanks.
Good show.
You, right?
Let's do it again.
See everybody next week. All right.
Okay. Until next week, this is your Skeptic's Guide to the Universe. The Skeptic's Guide to the Universe is a production of the New England Skeptical Society. For more information about this and other episodes, visit our website at www.thenes.com. Theorem is performed by Kenno and is used with permission.
That's last theorem. Let him far from the mainstream. Sleepless nights, slow burn days, problems, proofs, endless delays.
Can I even stop it?